The best candidate for the location of Craig's headquarters is in today's Front Street, more than halfway up the block to your left. It could be a building shown on a 1769 map of Wilmington, or it may be a large round tent called a marquee with a small stockade around it. The 1781 map shows a half circle within a rectangle, but no physical description remains. Regardless, this vicinity puts the headquarters roughly halfway between the British-occupied buildings in town and the back of the camp. See the camp map below. Cornwallis could have used it as well. The breastwork with abatis may cross Ann Street about halfway up the block from front. It then is thought to take a hard right in front, below the headquarters, and line the top of the riverbank back in this direction. At the time, the sharp drop on the right continued up to the left. Another redoubt is probably where now there is a multi-story building down and across Front Street. The breastwork angles away from it along front, leaving a gap. This might be used to create a protected entrance to the camp from town. In this section, be ready to pause the audio and walk a distance as before. Turn right and walk one block to Orange Street. Look at the building on your right. Pause. On the corner stands the 1740s Mitchell Anderson House, much changed since the war. At that time, it is owned by merchant Robert Hogg, with two G's, part owner of the largest salt importing business in the state. Though there were some salt works and mines in the American colonies, the majority of this vital commodity had to be shipped in. The British blockade no doubt hurt business, so the state supported new salt works like those in Beaufort. Continue along Front Street. You may keep listening to the audio, but stop if you get to Dock Street. Somewhere along the right side of this block, barracks were constructed for some of the new Continental, regular American Army, soldiers during the build-up to war. Also in town was a storehouse for ammunition used to supply North Carolina Continental forces through most of the Revolution. Three regiments are formed and trained in town, starting in March of 1776. The troops mutiny on July 14, tired of being stuck here with inadequate supplies and wanting to be in the action in the north. Militia, better armed at this point than regular troops, surround this and other barracks in town to bring them under control. By ironic coincidence, this is also the day a copy of the new U.S. Declaration of Independence arrives and is read in town for the first time. After the Continental regiments participate in several Southern campaigns that first year, returning here each time, they finally march north to join the army of General George Washington on Monday, April 7, 1777. When Craig invaded, some of his troops moved into the Continental barracks. Go to the near side of Dock Street and look across front. Pause. As noted earlier, during the war period, a large slip is in the middle of today's Dock Street, with wharves and warehouses on each side. Craig's supply or commissary officers took over the warehouse that runs along the left wharf, the end of which you see from here in 1781. This location provides for easy transfers of supplies from the boats to the camp. Walk another block back to Market Street. Pause. By mid-November 1781, things are getting desperate for Craig. A Patriot militia army at least three times the size of his, under Brigadier General Griffith Rutherford, has been marching to attack him. Rutherford, who led the 1776 campaign against the Cherokees, is camped at Heron's Bridge about 9 miles north. Craig has only 2 weeks' worth of flour left, but he cannot send out foraging parties with Rutherford so close. The British are forced to let their horses roam Eagle Island to find their own food. Given the situation, perhaps Craig has mixed feelings when he receives word of Cornwallis's surrender at Yorktown the month before and his own orders to go back to Charleston. On Sunday, November 18, his troops form into a column in Market Street facing the river to the sound of fifes and drums. They and their baggage begin to load onto ships all along the wharves. As many as 1,000 Tory civilians from around the region have already fled to the British ships downriver, leaving most of their possessions behind. The army is joined by camp followers and an unknown number of people escaping slavery. One of the escapees suffers tragic disappointment. Lavinia, held by declaration signer William Hooper, is spotted by friends of his. They physically drag her back to Hooper's house near Princess Street between 2nd and 3rd. Please scroll down to Cavalryman Cause Confusion, look up Market Street toward 3rd, and click the audio clip.